You're listening to a podcast from thisistheshow.co.uk.
Don't wanna know. This is the show. How the good birds go. Oh yeah.
Welcome to This Is The Show. I'm Andrew Moyer. We are outside today in a summer festival kind of feel. I am joined by an artist about to launch their debut album, Battery Powered. Hello, Lynette.
Hello.
So, just tell us a little bit about how this album came to be.
Well, actually, I took a bit of time off work a few years ago and I thought this is the best time to really, you know, finally put the music down, record it myself. I've got enough background knowledge from college for, you know, to record it. So I've got a back catalogue of songs that I've had since I was maybe 14, 15, something like that. And so I decided finally to just start, you know, recording it in bits and pieces. And slowly but surely the plan came about that I would create this album. I had the idea of Battery Powered for a while. In fact, that was a name we threw about when I was in the band Stormin' a D-Cup. For an album name, and so I thought, you know, it's a good name, let's not waste it. So I started recording it, and I got a bit of help with some production, but all in all I did pretty much the majority of the recording writing myself.
So was that a new creative freedom? You had been in a band before. Do you think it actually gave you the impetus to do that with that breaking up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when Stormin' a D-Cup did separate ways, it was pretty devastating for all of us, I think, and it wasn't something we'd planned, but it's just one of those things that happens. And once everything sort of, you know, smoothed over, I was just, you know, I'd go and see a live band and I'd ache because I missed playing live. It's just something I've been sort of built to do, and I just, you know, I needed to get back out there. And I thought the best thing to do was just start actually recording the songs that I've always had in my head that I've maybe busked or done at open mic, and time to get that out there and, you know, make a name for myself.
So how did you go about the recording process then? Was it all pretty much DIY, or did you get in the studio at all?
No, it was all DIY. I mean, I've got Logic 9 on my computer, and my gorgeous grandmother for my birthday gave me a new Mac, so that definitely helped. Having a lot more space and RAM and whatnot definitely helped. My laptop is probably about 7 years old now, so it wasn't going to keep up the pace. But it was just a case of starting slow, just creating fairly basic things and building on that. And then if I thought that's rubbish, start that again, I would just, you know, start from scratch. Sometimes there was actually two songs that once I'd started the album came to me whilst recording. So actually two of the songs were new in 2012, which was when I was sort of working on it. So I kind of created a bit more during the process, which was great. I learned a lot just through trial and error, which was, you know, that was kind of more difficult bit because I'm not professional, sound recorder, sound producer, that's the word. Can't even get the name right. But I learned a lot throughout the process. And I did learn a lot from college for it, but it was a great learning curve. But also I think I'm very happy with the end result, and I think it does actually sound as professional as I can make it. Anyway, I'm fairly happy with the sound quality at the end of it. So
you've got quite a mix in there. It's quite rock, alternative, but a bit of electronica in there.
Yeah, a little bit, yep.
How would you sort of describe your sound to anyone coming at it fresh?
I've been telling people it's a mix between rock, pop and trip hop. Not many people are familiar with trip hop, so I would say, you know, do you like Massive Attack? That's the main trip hop sort of band out there that you know, mainstream wise, that people have heard of. I would say Sneaker Pimps are the closest sort of sound to me, just because they do have a bit of an eclectic mix themselves. Sometimes they are a bit more rocky, sometimes they are a bit more trip hop and strange sounding. But there are a couple of my songs that are just downright poppy, but some of them are really heavy. And actually recently I've been getting a lot heavier. The set list we're playing at launch does have a mix of songs from the album and some new ones, and one of them is extraordinarily heavy in comparison. But I love my rock, so that's kind of more the vein I like to go in. But Rob Dugan, for example, who did some of the soundtrack for The Matrix, is one of my favourite. His album, Furious Angel, is one of my favourite albums ever made, and that's very sort of electronic heavy. But to describe myself in one specific genre is pretty impossible, unless I've made up my own genre, which would be pretty cool, but I don't know if I've classed as that yet. Maybe I need a few more albums before I've made up my own genre.
So obviously this has been quite a long time in the making. Was there ever a point when you thought you might not get through it? Is it frustrating recording on your own like that?
Oh God, the amount of hair I've torn out over... I remember one specific instance when I think it was for recording the song Villain, and I was trying to get the chorus right. Not the chorus, actually, the verse. It was either that or the road out, one of the two, and I kept on doing it wrong, or I kept on... Sometimes I have a bit of a bad habit of saying words really weirdly when I'm singing, like syllables will come out strangely just because I have a bit of a weird mix of an accent from living in England and Scotland. And so there was one time my flatmate was in, I sang this bit over and over again, and suddenly I just couldn't get it right. So I just... threw whatever it was I had in my hand, it was probably a bit of paper with the lyrics in it, threw it across the room and just screamed, and then thought, right, I'm going to make a cup of tea. So I went through a little sheepishly to the kitchen, and he was like, you're right, yeah, I'm fine, I'm just a bit frustrated. And he's, you know, kind of like, yeah, I kind of heard, kind of thing. It was, fairly embarrassing, but luckily we're quite good friends at times, so it's all good. But there were times where I thought, you know, I'm never going to get this to sound perfect. But then, you know, I just sort of thought, I had this very, very tunnel vision with it, that it's going to get there eventually. It doesn't matter how long it takes. It's, you know, I did have a time scale, but obviously they never, ever stick to that. So I knew it was going to get there eventually. I just knew that I just had to persevere, because it's something I so desperately want that nothing was going to get in my way, basically.
So... is it in some ways making these tracks and producing them, do you ever think they're finished, or do you just think you leave them at a point and then when you come back and listen they actually sound quite good?
Oh yeah, no, I'm bad for trying to go over the top. I mean, I was actually talking to this with some other musicians the other day. It's similar to painting. You know, if you know, I mean, a lot of musicians can also paint and draw and stuff as well. I actually did a year of art college before music, and you know, there are times when you think, oh, I just want to change that little bit, and then the end, you've just ruined a painting, and you can't press undo, you can't, you know, you can't rub it out if it's a painting. Sometimes you've worn the paper too thin or too much water on it, and it's ruined. It's the same with music. A lot of the time, your second take is better than your third. Most of the time, your first take will never be the right one. So you just have to find, you know, find the equilibrium, I guess. But you know, I am quite guilty for, you know, thinking, oh no, that was absolutely terrible, I need to do that again, and then get frustrated with myself, and then I'd listen to it the next day and think, why did I think that was, I thought that was out of tune, why did I think that? So I think I had to really learn how to use my voice and how to listen to my voice better than I did before. I had to and it was mainly with vocals, but sometimes with guitar, and also, you know, you get to a point where you think, I'm sure this is out of tune, and you start getting paranoid that you're in tune or out of tune, or your guitar doesn't sound right, and it got to the point where you just start getting a little bit, you know, almost paranoid about things in a way. And so you just kind of had to take a step back, you had to take a moment. Sometimes I would take a 2-week break, because then, you know, you'd go back to it and think, actually that sounds amazing, why was I, you know. So it's just a case of finding the right sort of equilibrium with it all, I think.
And in that recording, obviously, you're doing the bulk of it yourself. Did you bring in other musicians as well to help out?
Well, drum-wise, I mainly just used loops from Logic. I did program some in myself, and I actually got my friend Mikey, who has his own production label called Capasso Records. Look it up on Facebook, it's really good. And he helped me out with some of the drummers, because he's actually a very good drummer. He used to drum in a band called Jackal. Don't know if you've heard of them. They've now moved down to London. I think they're doing bigger things. He's not in them anymore, unfortunately. But absolutely exceptional drummer. And I thought, if I'm having problems with drum beats, he's the man to ask. So he helped me out with a couple of drum beats. And he also played the piano for Villain. I can play it myself, but at the time, I programmed it in, so I couldn't actually play it at the time, but I can play it now. So he programmed it in because he has a really nice keyboard, which I don't, so that was the other reason. Otherwise, the only other musician was Stephen Little, who he's in several bands, Omega Corridor, Little Love and the Friendly Vibes, and I think that's it at the moment, but he's always playing in loads of bands. He actually played bass for me for a while. He wrote the bass line for Now I Know. Other than that, everything else was myself, apart from the mastering, which Alistair Camp did, and Mikey helped me with a bit of the production, but other than that, pretty much everything me: flute, piano, guitar, bass. Pretty much, yeah.
you don't get a lot of flute on sort of rock records.
No, you don't, exactly. I mean, you know, and it's funny because I don't even listen to Death Hotel, or I'd make a Death Hotel bass joke here, but I mean, the flute mainly actually comes into the more trip hop kind of ones, like Badmouth and Blue Fields. At college, we did a cover of Behind Blue Eyes, and I always thought the lyrics at the bridge were just awful. So I thought I can't sing them with a good conscience. I mean, so instead I just made up my own flute solos, and it worked really well. It was kind of jazzy and rocky, kind of jazz flute kind of in a rock song. Kind of worked out quite well. But yeah, generally I use the flute for sort of more ambient kind of parts, really.
So obviously playing live is very different from recording process, so you have put together a band for your live shows as well then.
Mm-hmm. Gemma, who she played bass in Stormy Decup as well, so we worked very well together, so it was an obvious choice. I did work with, as I said, Stephen Little. He played bass, but unfortunately, with it being so insanely difficult to find a drummer, especially a good drummer, schedules clashed for practicing, so I asked Gemma, and she was up for it, and got guitarist Stu, who I worked with at Game, which is how I know him, and he was in a band called Fourth in Line, I think it was Tourette's, I can't remember. I know that him and a drummer were in one of them together. Bad memory, sorry guys. Ewan is an absolutely fantastic drummer, one of the best I've worked with, definitely, by far. And he's very, very good at listening to what you're doing and, you know, placing the beats in the right areas. Sometimes I've, you know, played with drummers where they haven't listened to the song. I mean, sometimes he doesn't listen to the song, but he picks up straight away anyway. But there have been times with previous drummers where, you know, they haven't really understood what I've wanted from that track. But he's been great at, you know, figuring that out and what I need. So,
So you have a big launch night for the album planned.
Yep.
What's happening at that?
Well, the Banshee Labyrinth has let me have the gig room until 3 a.m, which is great. And basically, the night's kicking off. Doors at 6:30, and the first band's on at 7. So we've got Stephen Little's band with Ewan Weddle. That's Little Love and the Friendly Vibes. Then we've got Sacre Noir, who I played with. It was at a night called Pat's Divorce Party, and that was the first time I'd heard of them. And we both played the same bill, and they were absolutely amazing, really, really cool. And they've got the electronic part, which kind of is in keeping with, you know, I've got rock bands and I've got sort of electronic one. I've got Hot Jupiter, they're from Glasgow, they're fantastic, really kind of funk rock, like really good bass lines, really cool, like funky rhythms and stuff, they're great. And they've got Violinists, which is also pretty cool. Originally we had Blackjack, but unfortunately they've had to pull out last minute, so if any bands are listening and they fancy stepping in last minute, feel free. And then after that, we've actually got a surprise. It's not a surprise, it's advertised everywhere, but it's a little bit of a something different. We've got a burlesque dancer doing a little spot before we play, just to shake it up a bit, you know, just have a bit, you know, it's not just a gig, it's an album launch, it's an event rather than a night, you know. So we're just trying to shake it up, make it a bit more unique, make it a bit more, you know, not eye-opening, what's the word, you know, eye-catching, that's one. And then we're on last, and we'll be on until about 11:45, and then we've got the night till 3. We're going to have a playlist or DJ, something like that, playing some decent tunes for the rest of the night, so we can have a party, and I'll be having my albums out, and I can, you know, we'll be selling them after the show. I've got a few bits of merchandise as well, so it's going to be a good night.
So is it quite hard to organise something like that, to bring all that together?
Definitely. I am not the most organised person that I know. I'm not very good at these kind of things. It's quite difficult trying to coordinate it all, just down to the basics of trying to figure out the order of the bands and what time they'd start at, so I can tell them, you're starting at this time, you're finishing at this time, this is how long your set is and stuff, because I've never had to organise stuff like that before. So for me, that, you know, I'm going on experience, but you know, I've done tons and tons of gigs, but as far as I'm concerned, you're told, okay, sound check's at 5, you need to be there for 5, bring all your gear, we'll sound check you, and then you'll be on it 9 o'clock, done. Okay, great, I know what I'm doing, great, that's cool. No, I need to organise drum kits, amps, who's taking what where, which bands are sound checking, which ones aren't, you know. I've you know, ordered leaflets and posters. I've been literally walking around town like a madman trying to get posters up everywhere. I've been walking up and down Leith Walk a couple of times, up and down Gorgie and Dowry, up and down Newton. That's quite a lot of walking, you know. And just, you know, going to open mic nights trying to get the name out there, handing out leaflets and whatnot. So it's been a test, I can tell you. And also just trying to get practices where everyone can actually attend and stuff like that. So it has been a bit of a challenge. But actually, as stressed as I've gotten, it's actually been quite enjoyable, although I'm not going to do it again in a hurry. Next album won't be for a while, I can tell you that. Unless somebody else wants to organise it for me, that'd be great. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's got its good points and bad points. So, yeah.
So you've done a lot of the hard work, obviously. You've recorded this album. Do you look forward to getting out and playing all those songs live?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm really excited. I mean, we have gigged some of those songs already, not many this year, but we have had about 3 gigs so far 4 gigs. I do sometimes do solo acoustic gigs as well, but I always find that certain songs that sound really good rocky, they do work acoustically quite well, but I always come across as one of those kind of singer-songwriters that has a lot to complain about, and that's not me, you know. I mean, some of my songs have got, you know, fairly whiny lyrics, I guess, but they're always backed up with, you know, counter melodies and cool little hooks and stuff, which make it, you know, kind of almost, you know, Villain, for example, was actually a song that I wrote about the band breaking up. It does sound like a couple breakup, which is quite bizarre, but I suppose in a way that's kind of how I felt at the time. And that song has got a piano melody for the chorus instead, and then, you know, but then when I sing that live acoustically on my own, it does almost come across as, you know, that whiny girl in the corner playing her acoustic guitar or whatever. So it's great doing it live, and as I said, Ewan's such a fantastic drummer that he really livens it up a lot more than, you know, before, basically, because when I first started gigging, it'd be Steve and I, him on bass and myself guitar, and we'd have a backing track on my iPod, which I use the original drum loops and stuff for, but it's not the same, you know. You don't have that kick behind you, you don't, you know, and you have the sort of adrenaline and stuff on stage, which you don't get quite as much when you've got a backing track, you know. So playing them live is always great, and you know, and also, I mean, fingers crossed it's going to be nice and busy, and you know, you've got the audience to play off and stuff. And we've also got new songs that people haven't heard before, like Puppet Strings, for example, isn't on the album. It's definitely going to be on the next one, though, and that's one that I'm so excited for everyone to hear, because it's a lot heavier, it's a lot darker, and it's got some pretty punchy lyrics as well. So I was rather angry at the time of writing that one, so sometimes you get your best work from pretty strong emotions. So yeah, definitely very excited for the night. As much as I'm stressed, I'm more excited than I am worried or stressed, which is always a good thing.
So the album obviously features multi-layered production. Did you find it easy to translate that to live band sort of setting?
Yeah, actually. I mean, there is maybe 3 songs which I think are virtually impossible to do live. Badmouth, for example, is one of them. I would need to have a much better, bigger keyboard, for example, and even then it's very, very piano heavy, and it's got a lot of layers, which is very difficult to transcribe to a band. that one's not so impossible. There is definitely a way to do it, but we just haven't sort of figured out what it is. Also, I don't have a keyboard anymore, so that part sort of I have an absolutely tiny kid's keyboard, which is great for the little like piano hooks in things like While You Mourn, for example, has a little keyboard bit at the end, and that's great for the little synthesizer bits, but not for proper full-on piano parts. Same goes for Bluefields. That one's very piano and flute heavy. And then if I'm already playing piano, you know, I don't know if... I haven't actually asked, but I don't know if Stu or Gemma actually play piano or keyboard. So, and they definitely don't play flute. So that would be quite a difficult one. Unless I use my loop pedal, but even so, that can always go wrong in the night. So there are certain ones which are kind of, you know, avoided live. Ambivalence is definitely one, because that one's extremely trip-hop. It's almost a little bit dubstep, actually. But then, you know, on the night, for example, I would maybe have that in between the bands or after the show at the end of the night. So, you know, there's a chance for everyone to hear everything, I guess.
So this is obviously the big launch night coming up. You've got plans to gig a lot more over the coming months?
Definitely. I mean, the idea was we were going to try and get some gigs before the launch, try and get our name out there and try and get some more followers, people to come for the actual main event. Unfortunately, things haven't worked out that way. We've been more sort of too much to focus on with the night. But after this, you know, I've got albums to sell on the night. I've now got in touch with CDBaby.com to distribute my music on every, like most of the online distributors, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon. So I'm just waiting for that to actually go ahead, so it should be in the next couple of days. So by the time the launch happens, hopefully it'll be on iTunes as well. So those of you who, you know, don't live in Edinburgh or, you know, can't come for the night, you can still get it if you don't come to albums, but sorry, the album launch. But if you do come to a gig, then you still have the opportunity to get it from myself, which is pretty good. So you know, the more gigs the better, more I get, you know, the chance to get my name out there. We definitely want to broaden the horizons as well. Stormy Decup used to go through to Glasgow a lot and absolutely loved going through to Glasgow. Unfortunately, Rockers is shut down now, and that was our favourite place to go. But there's things like, you know, Pivo and things like, and Cosmopol, Clyde Bank and Cosmopol, Glasgow, they were great as well. Things like, we used to go to Dundee all the time, and so we're hoping that soon enough we'll start heading out and then maybe even do a UK tour eventually if the time comes for that. So that'd be great.
Awesome. So is there one track that you would pick out from the album just to, as a tease, what would you play to people to get them listening to you?
Well, it's difficult to say. I think it'd probably be Wounds Fade, which sounds slightly more emo than it actually is, luckily. It's the rockiest one, I think. It's the more upbeat one. It's the one that people can dance to more. There's even a guitar solo, which I'm quite chuffed with, because I've never been a virtuoso on the guitar, but I am pretty chuffed with the guitar. But that's the one that I would say, listen to that one first. That's the more, you know, it's got a catchy riff that you can definitely remember, and, you know, I think so. Either that or Villain, because that's the other sort of catchy one. It's got a catchy keyboard part, so. But I would probably say Wounds Fade, I reckon.
The album is Battery Powered by Lynette. Thank you very much for talking to me today.
Cheers, thanks. You're mine.
For more, visit thisistheshow.co.uk, facebook.com/thisistheshow, or tweet us at The Show Podcast.